Discography. Oh shit, it's been a long break, but we're back. I'm going to start with this introduction. His nickname is... I can't fucking say this shit. It's the Rain King, because he makes it rain on them hoes. It's Mr. Rob Fortune.
Thank you for that introduction. I was expecting a Rain Man joke. Now I'd like to introduce this man. He's not a necrophiliac, but he is a zombie ass eater. It's Jomo.
Are you thinking you might want to have sex with me?
Yes, thank you. Definitely not into necrophilia. Ass eating, that is on the table. It depends what the dirt star looks like, all right? I should be able to look at the wrinkles. It shouldn't look like a fucking smudge of hemorrhoids, so... Jesus Christ. Can't believe I just fucking said that. Thank you, Rob. You've opened a new door. Thank you for making me a bigger piece of shit. I was already a big piece of shit. It's okay. He told me underwater love feels like a rubber glove. It's Mr. Jack Falcon.
What's up? How's everyone doing?
Good.
I'm doing good.
Have you ever had shower sex?
Oh yeah, of course.
Doesn't it feel like you're fucking like a nitrile glove that's wet?
I'm not a fan of it.
Not a
water
fan.
Somehow is like the anti lubricant.
Yeah, you got to put some WD-40 on it or something.
Just, yeah, at least.
I don't know. It might cause an infection.
Lube it up.
Yeah,
lube it up.
Lube it up. Spit on it. Little bukkake tsunami. No big deal.
The way to have optimal shower sex, though, is to have a spigot head on like each side of the shower. Otherwise, someone's like freezing balls cold.
Do you write a book on this bullshit or what? What are you the fuck?
No, but I've showered with people before, and normally somebody's like out of the water that's warm, and they're freezing their ass off.
Rob, do you notice how he said people? So he's showered with men.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure you've showered with tons of guys.
In the appropriate setting, like in sports. I was on a sports team, in fucking boot camp. Yeah, it is what it is. But you seem like the guy who was like, yo, let's go shower, Jomo. And I'm like, no, like, what is your fucking problem? Like,
I haven't showered with a man since boot camp.
Yeah. Okay. Keep
the girliest thing about all of this is needing warmth during your shower.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the thing. Rob, I want to join you. I'm such a bitch. I get in the shower and it's like lukewarm. I'm like, nah, that shit's freezing. I need to just do it. And I think about you all the time when I'm about to hop in the shower, because I should be getting into a cold one.
Yeah.
Jomo, you take cold showers?
It depends. So if I'm like, if I just got done working out, I'll take a hot shower, then I'll turn it to cold for about a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. To like close my pores and shit, and it's good for your health. But I love cold plunging. Like sitting in a cold bath is fucking amazing. It's good for your body too. It makes
I gotta just quit being a bitch. That's my problem.
It makes my dick and balls disappear though. That's the only sad part.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Wait, I gotta do. That's what it makes my dick do. It's like.
Well, luckily, that's what it makes everyone's dick do, so it's not like it's different for you.
Yeah, not at all. So what are we doing today? What do we got on the table?
We're doing some two records from the 80s, two from the 90s. I thought they were either all from the 80s or all from the 90s, and as usual, I was wrong. So we're doing one album by the band Hole, one album by Sonic Youth, one by Faith No More, and one by Pearl Jam.
Let's spin the wheel.
You ready to spin, baby?
Yeah, I got a new spin sound.
When you say teenage, how are we talking?
Oh boy,
missed the R. Kelly episode. That was such a good episode.
Yeah, it's a life changing episode, actually. All right, land on Sonic Youth. Let me drop this artwork in the comments, and then I kept trying to say, but Jomo kept fucking playing sounds. If I yap too long, just play the wrap it up music. That's fine. We're gonna try to keep this to an hour. Yeah. Sure, anything, I guess. All right, let me drop this artwork in the comments.
Why are you gay?
Daydream Nation is a 12-track record released in 1988, coming in just under 71 minutes long. It's the band's fifth studio album, reaching number 99 on the British Albums Charts. It contains the singles Silver Rocket, Teenage Riot, Candle, and providence. After Daydream Nation was released, it received widespread acclaim from critics and earned Sonic Youth a major label deal. It has since been widely considered to be Sonic Youth's greatest work, as well as one of the greatest albums of all time. In 2005, it was chosen by the Library of Congress to be preserved in the National Recording Registry. Sonic Youth's standard songwriting method involved Thurston Moore bringing a bringing in melody ideas and chord changes that the band would spend several months fashioning into full-length songs. Instead of paring the songs down as the group did with previous records, the months-long writing process for Daydream Nation resulted in long jams, such as some lasting over half an hour. Several friends of Sonic Youth, including Henry Rollins, had praised their long live improvisations and told the group that its records never captured them. With more on a writing spree, the album ultimately had to be expanded to a double album. Sonic Youth recorded Daydream Nation at New York's Green Street Basement Studio. Despite the studio's engineer being accustomed to working with hip-hop artists, Sonic Youth booked 3 weeks of recording time at Green Street's Studio A, starting in mid-July 1988. They paid $1,000 per day of studio time, which was the most they had paid to record an album up to that point. Due to the amount of preparation the band put into composing its music, the recording process was efficient. The session became rushed near the end when the head of the band's British label, Blast First, had set a mastering date of August 18th. As a result of the time pressure, Kim Gordon was not happy with some of her vocal takes. Sonic Youth spent a whole night creating a final mix for the three-song trilogy so it could be mastered the following morning. The record ultimately cost $30,000. Daydream Nation's title came from a lyric in the song Hyperstation, the second part of the final trilogy. It's an anthem in a vacuum on a hyperstation, daydreaming days in a daydream nation. Sonic Youth had also considered the title Tonight's the Day from a lyric in Candle. The cover for Daydream Nation features the 1983 painting called Candle. The vinyl version's four sides in the compact disc inner tray contains four symbols, each representing one of the members of the band, as an homage to and a parody of the four symbols from Led Zeppelin 4. Rob, what do you think of Daydream Nation?
So I like Sonic Youth, and I have for a long time. So I remember, like, kind of before I was a musician, watching some video that I had on VHS with my brother. I wanted to listen to Nirvana. Like, at the time, Nirvana was the only, like, band that I knew, but there was a lot of footage of, like, Thurston Moore, like, going around the festivals, like, talking to people, and, like, Thurston Moore was a funny motherfucker, and I think that's kind of the charm, like, especially of like these guys, like I or this genre, I guess, like a lot of the grunge dudes had a real sense of humor, and it was, you know, Cock Rock had a sense of humor, but it was different, right? It was fucking something else. It was talking about your dick and fucking bitches and I don't know what else, but I don't know. So I really liked Thurston Moore's sense of humor. I liked that first, and then what else? So Thurston Moore, like, so we grew up in Western Mass, and Thurston Moore had noise shows like all the time in Amherst and stuff like that. And it was supposed to be mind blowing. I don't think I ever made it to one, because I think he just kind of showed up places and they'd let him play, and he would make, like, feedback loops on his guitar for an hour. And for a certain person, that's the most boring fucking thing in the world, but for a lot of us nerds, we fucking loved that shit. And so, yeah, I don't know, I got something out of noise shows, and well, not all of them, some of them fucking bored me to tears and were nothing, but other times I don't know. So what I'm trying to say here is Sonic Youth is a cool fucking band. I don't think the vocals are very good. That's Kurt Cobain changed fucking music forever. Like you could be a bad singer and have a fucking crazy ass career. Like, there's a fucking before and after with Kurt Cobain. Like, everybody before, you had to, like, be pretty and, like you know, be a top-tier fucking opera singer. You know what I'm saying. I'm exaggerating, but whatever. Yeah, but then, like, after Kurt Cobain, you could fucking sound like shit. You could sound like Weezer. You could sound like fucking, yeah, these dudes, like, I don't know how many people sing in Sonic Youth, but I feel like none of them can sing, like, I mean, none of them are objectionable either. They're all, like, flat. But, like, I don't know. It's like I give them a C fucking grade as far as singing goes. And the drumming, I don't like the snare. To me, the snare is a wet fart. But bass, good. Cars, like, good. And then, like, the noise, like, those three things, the noise, guitar, bass, like, that's what makes this band special. And, like, I have a lot of friends who love Sonic Youth and, like, followed, like, have listened to, like, all of their music. And because I believe there's a ton of it. Maybe I'm crazy, but I think there's a lot of live albums and stuff. And I can understand liking this band because there is something special. There is something magical about them. And I remember reading Kim Gordon's book, Girl in a Band. There was a it was a good book. And I remember like some of the shit that I remember about that book is, you know, when she was 20, like touring was awesome. And like, I needed to hear that because I had like a lot of, wanderlust. Like I was in bands, but I never got to tour. So like reading a book called Girl in a Band about, you know, Sonic Youth, like I really needed to hear that. And then she goes on to say, but it became worse, like when I became like, you know, later 30s and 40s or whatever, like needing to take a shit, but every venue in the United States, like, you know, male bathrooms, fucking forget about it. There's feces on the wall and whatever. And the female bathrooms are only 20% better. So it's like being on stage is awesome, but everything else about being like a road musician kind of sucks. And the older you get, like the less willing you are to like sleep on a floor and shit on a shitty fucking toilet and whatever. And so I needed to hear that too, where maybe I missed my chance to couch surf and all that, but I also never got fucking raped by people willing to put me up on their couch in exchange for, you know, fucking sexually assaulting me or whatever. So what else would I want to say? Oh, yeah, and then another thing in that book was, Kim Gordon was married to Thurston Moore, and their, like, divorce was super fucking messy. Like he had like an affair for I don't know how long, and it was pretty fucking public at a certain point too. He was talking about how he hasn't been single for a couple of years or something because his second girlfriend broke up with him 3 years ago, and she was like, bitch, you've been married to me for 20 years. Don't fucking say you haven't been single for 3 years. Like, fuck you. So I remember, like, my heart broke for her a little bit there. But I don't know. Monogamy is hard. And so I don't know. So anyways, that's my long rant about Sonic Youth. I like them. I don't love them. I'm giving them second place for the week. That's it.
Yeah, I've been meaning to listen to this record for a while. Rob has brought it up to me a ton. It's, you know, stuff just falls by the wayside. But yeah, I'm glad we're listening to it now. I'm also just realizing that I said that the song was Providence. The song is clearly Providence.
Oh, my God.
Hey, I don't read, okay?
Clearly.
I pay taxes. This record is, when I hear this, I wonder if these guys were influenced or how much they were influenced by the Talking Heads. I don't know if they were, but I feel like with the songwriting structures on this album and the way everything flows here, it reminds me of Remain in Light, the way that was composed and one we talked about previously. Anyway, I think this record holds up 35 years later. I think it's fucking great. Sonic Youth in general is a band that when I was going through their discography, I remembered seeing quite a bit of their album covers, especially the one that's like a knitted, whatever you call it, teddy bear or whatever on the cover. It's just a band that I've never given the proper time, and they are one that definitely deserve it. What else do I want to say about this? Yeah, I think this record breathes well. One thing that helps it is that some of these songs, a lot of them are like 7 minutes long, and having that expanded time lets you do quite a bit of stuff. There's things that happen in this album that I don't know if people would have the balls to do today. In Silver Rocket, which was a single, right? It goes into this fever dream part like three quarters of the way through. So at first when I was listening to it before I did any research, it's like, okay, yeah, this song wasn't a single because of this. Then I find out it was a single, so it's like, okay, they must have cut this part out. No, that's just in there. That's in the music video. And they're like, there's a part where like Thurston Moore just on the ground laying on top of his guitar and people are doing whatever the fuck for this kind of like intermission part. I've that honestly seemed so fresh to me. I don't know what band I've seen do that recently, where they just say "fuck it," lay on the ground, let the distortion or the feedback ring out or whatever. And I don't know. It felt fresh. I wanted to send that immediately to the guys on Hollow Teeth and be like, "Yo, this, just steal this from 35 fucking years ago," because I don't see anyone doing it nowadays. Especially within like the hardcore scene, it's always music, it's always chugs, it's always noise at all time. Like the only time people stop is in between songs to tune or to yell some shit. So that was cool to see. But yeah, I think this record just flows. It is long. This album is an hour and 10 minutes. But it has balls. There's tons of stuff going on. Like if you were to try to like disassemble this entire thing at once, it'd probably give you anxiety, just due to how long it is, how many things are going on. Sound quality is good. I'm surprised that this costs $30,000, but you know, you get what you pay for. Appetite for Destruction around this time was $500,000. So I guess compared to that, it's not all that much. But yeah, I don't know. This is a good album. I really enjoyed listening to it. It's one that you can kind of just space out to and even let it play in the background. You don't have to listen to all the words that people are saying, but or singing. But yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in here that's, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes long. It's just kind of breathing, doing its own thing. And some of them I'd like to hear what the half an hour of versions of their jams were, because I, like I've said before, I'd listen to an hour long version of whatever song. And yeah, these guys have they sound good. Everything flows. No one's rushing anything. Yeah, this is a good record. I would put it into the rotation. Jomo, what do you think of Daydream Nation?
I for years, I thought that Sonic Youth was from Seattle, but then I found out they're actually from New York City. It explains why they sound lazy and jaded. disparaging comments aside, Sonic Youth paved the way for grunge in a way to be what it is today, which is obscure. Sorry, not sorry. I don't know. I've always put Sonic Youth in the back of the line, man. There's, you know, during this time you had Smashing Pumpkins, Nirvana, the grunge scene was blowing up big. Then you had Sonic Youth, and I've always heard people say that Sonic Youth, man, they're great. But it, to me, it's just like it doesn't do anything for me. It's like a girl giving the over the lip blowjob. It's like, what are you doing? Like what is your teeth afraid to touch my cock? Like, what the fuck is going on, man? So it's not for me at all. And it didn't wow me. You know, you listen to Nirvana's Nevermind album, and it has a distinct sound that, you know, has a wide range, and it's just an overall great album because of how many different songs and how well they sound. And Sonic Youth has the same, like, a distinct sound themselves, and it stinks. It's just it's not good. It's not for me. This is part of grunge history for sure, but it's faded into obscurity for me. And I get how it's just terrible, man. I don't like this type of music. It's 2 for 10 for me. That's my rating. I can't go any further. A lot of people talk about Sonic Youth, man. They're the same people who smell like Nong Champa and patchouli oil, okay? That's all.
Nice.
I'm going to guess there's going to be one album on here that ranks lower for you, at least one album than this one.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. Just guess. Take a wild one.
But, I already know which one it is. these guys had a great run musically. Their first album came out in 1983, and their last official like studio album came out in 2009. So for like, I'm trying to think of what grunge bands outlasted them, or I don't know if these guys fully fit into the grunge thing. I think grunge kind of becomes this umbrella term for kind of music during a time, but like they've outlasted most. I think like one of the longest ones is Pearl Jam. They're still going today. But yeah, I don't know. This is a different record. It's not like that record where it's like, hey, like a macho record in your face, but there's, I don't know, there's a lot of hooks. There's a lot of cool things going on. It's fun. There's electronic stuff. So yeah, I don't know. You're either probably going to love it or hate it. Jomo hates it, but
yeah,
no one was surprised there. Let's read a couple of YouTube comments. First one, there's no better feeling than leaving school and listening to Teenage Riot on the bus ride home. Next one says, I find this most enjoyable after midnight when half of me wants to sleep and half of me wants to continue listening. Next comment, quite simply, one of the greatest albums of all time. Next one, really sounds like nothing else. I still think that this is the best album of the 80s. And lastly, Sonic Youth is a band that makes me feel alive. So yeah, there's a lot of people who love this album, and it's never going to die. Is there anything else anyone wants to say about Daydream Nation?
No.
All right. Let me spin the wheel.
You spin me right around, baby, right?
What is it? What, by teenage, what is it? What do you mean?
When you say teenage, how old are we talking?
How old are we talking? All right, landing on hold. Drummo's favorite band.
Oh, great. The old glory hole.
The old glory. Back to the old glory hole.
I'm gonna blow my load at the glory hole.
All right. Live Through This is a 12-track record released in 1994, coming just over 38 minutes long. It's the band's second studio album, reaching number 52 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart. It contains the singles Miss World, Doll Parts, Violet, and Softer Softest. Originally signed to Caroline Records in the United States, Hole began record deal negotiations with Geffen Records in early 1992. In February 1992, they signed a 7-album deal with Geffen's subsidiary, DGC Records, reportedly with an advance of $1 million and a royalty rate higher than Nirvana's. I don't know what crack people were fucking smoking in the early 90s, but it was getting around. Recorded in late 1993, it departed from the band's unpolished hardcore aesthetics to more refined melodies and song structure. Frontwoman Courtney Love said that she wanted to record, she wanted the record to be shocking to the people who think that we don't have a soft edge, but maintain a harsh sensibility. The Georgia studio was booked at the recommendation of the Smashing Pumpkins, who recorded their second studio album, 1993's Siamese Dream, there. It's the only Hole album to feature bassist Karen Pfaff, and the final album to be released during her lifetime, as she died 2 months after its release. Live Through This was met with critical acclaim, despite this, it was also the subject of some public discussions regarding unsubstantiated rumors that Love's husband, Kurt Cobain, who died by suicide 1 week before the album's release, helped ghostwrite it. The claim has been disputed by everyone involved, although Cobain did sing additional backing vocals on 2 tracks, Asking For It and Softer Softest. According to drummer Patty Schlemmel, an employee at Triclops Sound Studios first introduced the band to crystal meth. Schlemmel, her brother, and Pfaff engaged in intense drug use during recording. Miss World was one of these songs recorded while high. Pfaff's bass lines were completed from scratch tracks. I'm going to guess the person recording the album said, "This has never happened on an album that we've done in all these years. Every single bass track on Live Through This was from the basic tracks. There was no bass overdubs because there was no need to, because they were perfect. Love completed between 10 and 12 vocal tracks for each song. The album title Live Through This comes from the song Asking For It. If you live through this with me, I swear I'll die for you. Live Through This has been certified platinum." Jomo, do you know how many albums Hole put out in their initial run?
Don't torture me. Because
apparently they signed the 7-album deal in 1993.
Who's the executive that made a bonehead decision like that?
He had to have been banging someone. He had to have. That's the stupidest fucking decision.
Here's what I think of that executive.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Yeah, that's what he did.
Yeah, exactly.
He fucked up.
So their original album, their debut in 1991, Pretty on the Inside, which Courtney Love says is unlistenable.
It is.
That would have been before this. So after they made this 7-album fucking deal, they put out 2 records. They put out Live Through This in 94 and Celebrity Skin in 98. And then they split at some point after that. And then Courtney Love, because she's an absolute bitch, she made a solo album and it probably sold nothing. So she made a new Hole album by herself called Nobody's Daughter in 2010. That is apparently supposed to have been her second studio, solo studio album, but she branded it with Hole, pissed off all the other members of the band. And that was the last time it was ever used. So whoever offered that 7-album fucking deal, I don't know. I hope you got whatever you put into it. Jomo, what do you think of Hole?
Yeah, I'll tell you this. Courtney Love is the reason we need to repeal the 19th Amendment, all right? Mm-hmm. She's fucking... if you don't know what that is, it's suffrage and women's right to vote. So glad I'm pissing you off, all right? We know she killed Kurt Cobain. She looks like she smells like meth and body odor. And Courtney Love has the likability of Hitler and Xi Jinping, okay? Dude, I had to listen. Fuck you, Jack Falcon, for making me listen to this fucking album. I contemplated rupturing my eardrums, bro, with a pen, and writing a song that Courtney Love is just an insufferable cunt. Her voice should be used to torture prisoners at a Supermax prison or at Guantanamo Bay. One of the two. It just She's just she just looks fake. She doesn't look like she's real. She looks like a lizard person. It's not there's nothing that looks real about her, bro. She killed one of the greatest grunge artists of all time. He didn't kill himself. She killed him. And that's what happened. And she's a giant piece of shit. I blame her for killing Kurt Cobain all the day. And, you know, why does she make angry lesbian music? I don't get it. This is like the Dyke soundtrack to menstruating. 1 for 10 for the week. I wish that I would ate the shotgun or, you know, maybe she did. I don't know. She could drink bleach for all I care. Fuck it. Fuck you, Jack Falcon.
Well, it's good to know that you liked it. Yeah. So when I first listened to this, as soon as it was done, my initial thought was like, what the fuck did I just listen to? So when I went in to get the YouTube comments for this record, dude, I don't know. Mm-hmm. There are so many people who love this album. Also, when this released, it has like five stars across the board. I will say I listened to it quite a bit. I like it more now than I did initially. It still is not my favorite of the week. Courtney Love, okay, so yeah, she has her moments of being like fat or coked out or on heroin or looking like trailer trash or being attractive. She has moments of it. I've said before that when I was in like elementary school, somebody gave me a copy of A Celebrity Skin to listen to, which the song I still consider a banger. I actually think about that song still like semi-regularly. I've never gone back to listen to these other ones. Courtney Love, actually, she has moments also of being like a decent human being there. So she has this long-standing feud with Dave Grohl that's like almost hilarious to watch, because Courtney Love, like you were saying, she has no charm. She had like nobody likes her anyway. I used to have a movie called Kurt and Courtney that my sister like bought for me from somewhere. It was a VHS tape, and it was about how Courtney Love had Kurt Cobain killed. I don't know what happened there. There was a bunch of people saying that she offered them money, like hitmen. She would offer them money to go kill him. Yeah, I don't know. We're never going to find out, unfortunately. Oh, in 2005, in an interview that Courtney Love was in, someone asked her a question about, I don't know, Hollywood or whatever. Like, what's a word of advice you can give to people who want to get to Hollywood? And she said, like, if Harvey Weinstein invites you to a party, don't go to it. She said that in 2005. And then, of course, the Me Too movement popped off like 10 years after that. Oh, also right around that time is when her acting career died. So people are saying, yeah, it died because she said that shit about Harvey Weinstein. I don't know. Whatever. That has nothing to do with the music here. Oh, there is also a good interview with Howard Stern from back in the day. Whatever. Yeah, there are some songs on here. Okay, Doll Parts, right? That's like the big hit off of this album. After, like, Violet, I actually think is a good song. Jennifer's Body, I think, is a good song. Asking for It, I don't know where Kurt Cobain is in that song, where he's buried in the mix. I couldn't hear him. But there's, like, Plump, even I think that song is good. But when I hear Doll Parts, after I've heard those songs where, yeah, you said, like, angsty woman, I don't know, music, when you get to Doll Parts, it's like so slowed down and boring that it's like it's putting me to sleep after hearing the other stuff. And there's a line in that song where she says, I want to be the girl with the most cake. And whenever I hear that line, I picture like a meme of fat Courtney Love with that written on it. And someone has to have already made it, because she's had her fat phase a couple times, I'm pretty sure. And there's parts of this record that it's kind of like embarrassing to listen to, because it's like, okay, do people think I'm listening to like the Lilith Fair compilation or something? Like Softest starts with this intro piece that is very embarrassing to be caught in public listening to, but it picks up, and yeah, it's not that bad. Rockstar, the last song on this album, has these two false starts where Courtney Love starts singing before the music starts. And I know they're probably staged, but I'm going to give her charm points for it because she can use all the charm points that she can get. I think it's also one of the best songs on the track list, but I think it is staged, but maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I guess there's drugs going around. It was probably a fucking wild time down there. So yeah, I don't know. This record is a lot better than I thought it was. It will grow on you. I'm not saying it's going to be the best album of the 90s, but after I listened to it for the fourth, fifth time, I was like, okay, yeah, I definitely do not have the same reaction I did to when I listened to it the first time. Rob, what do you think of Live Through This?
Yeah, so I remember hearing, one of their hits back, so back when I was 8 or 10 or something like that, you know, my brother was building like half pipes in our backyard, and like we were listening to Hole and stuff like that, and like that's like a good memory for me. I mean, we listened to a lot of shit together, a lot of punk, a lot of, you know, Nirvana and NoFX, Dead Kennedys. I don't know, like that era is like a good era of my life, and I remember thinking that like music is awesome, and like I thought that that song, you know, the one with the chorus, like "Go on, take everything" or whatever. I fucking like. I thought that song was really badass. Now you fast forward and people are saying she killed Kurt Cobain, or maybe she denies it, you know, whatever. And then just a lot of people are saying she did it, and you know, I don't know what to think. And and then yeah, the whole feud with Dave Grohl, and like it's she just sounds like she's like shitting on fucking Kurt Cobain's memory, and like to me that's that there's ego there, so it's like she doesn't want him to succeed at all costs, and so like I in spirit I start to hate her somewhere around there. And then I read Girl in a Band, Kim Gordon, you know, because they like they all toured together, right? Like Kim Gordon, Sonic Youth, like Nirvana, they all like toured together a lot. And if I remember correctly, in Girl in a Band, she says, you know, Courtney Love did it, you know, either we can't prove it or like, you know, whatever, like, you know, so-and-so who was fucking there won't testify in court against her, but she fucking did it. Everyone fucking knows, right? You know, it's just like, and you know, okay, so people can be motivated to like say that kind of stuff to sell books, but I don't know. Like Courtney Love is a fucking cursed person, but to me the final nail in the coffin, and maybe I'm fucking maybe I'm misremembering this, but what I remember of the Howard Stern interview with Courtney Love on it is she says, "Oh yeah, Kurt was nice," but then later on it was like, "Oh yeah, he had all this like gross feminine energy and some other shit." And it's just like, okay, you didn't fucking respect this dude. So all of your actions speak that this dude's money was your money, because I forget where I heard this exactly, but it was like all the conflicts towards the end of Nirvana were like, oh, we all used to split the money in this kind of way, but now I, Kurt, need more of the money because fucking my girlfriend is making me. And then everything that goes down between Courtney and Dave, it's just like, okay, so like Courtney is absolutely fucking obsessed with like these are not peers. This is somebody who needs to destroy her husband in order to have any self-value. Like being next to somebody who has the success, well, that makes me look bad, right? Because I'm not better than him, so I have to be better than him, so I have to destroy him, my husband. And this is a spiritual sickness, and it's just like I can't. I get fucking so upset thinking about this shit. It's like you don't fucking marry someone to destroy them. I'm not really saying much metaphors here. Like she literally fucking killed her husband and then like defamed him. I get so fucking worked up thinking about this shit. I fucking hate Courtney Love. I did not listen to this week. I mean, at one point when I was dating my ex, she put on a song, and I'm like, this is a fucking weird song. And then all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of that chorus, you know, go on, take everything, whatever the fuck. And I'm like, oh, this is the fucking song that I loved when I was 10? The song is a fucking mess. Why did I think this? I don't know, because when I was 10, I was easy to fucking fool. I don't fucking know. I thought I don't know, like, yeah, so I fucking hate Courtney Love so fucking much, and I didn't download this album, I didn't listen to it. You can't fucking make me. Fuck you. 0 for 10. That's it.
Hang on, I want to make the clap sound. Hang on. That was beautiful, Rob. this album is a mess, but it's, I don't know, it's, there's a lot of, like, we'll get to the YouTube comments in a second. Yeah, the Dave Grohl controversy, one of the things she was saying is that, like, Kurt Cobain, who was dead at the time when she was on Howard Stern, should have gotten all the money for Nirvana because the other people didn't have any talent, and then all the money would siphon to her. But it's like, okay, this, okay, yeah. whatever. You do your thing. I mean, she convinced the record company to give them a 7 fucking album contract. So I don't know. She's able to convince people to do shit. Yeah, everyone knows it happened. No one can prove it. It's been so long that I don't know. I don't think anyone's ever going to. All right, let's read a couple of YouTube comments. First, my favorite album ever. Next one says, I turn it up and yell and bounce around when I don't feel good. Next one says, I wore out this cassette in 94 twice. Next comment stands up to Testament of Time. And lastly, up there with the best. I'm going to say that this record as a whole was a lot better than I thought it was going to be, at least after a couple listens. But if somebody listened to this one time, it's more of an acquired taste. Listened to this one time and said they fucking despised it, it wouldn't surprise me. Maybe if they listened to a couple times, if they really wanted to get into it. Whatever, it doesn't really matter. It's whole. No one here gives two shits about Courtney Love. Anyway. Okay, are we ready to spin the wheel?
Yeah, spin the wheel.
I hope she dies a miserable death.
When you say teenage, how are we talking?
Like, not only is she trying to ruin Kurt Cobain's name, she also just ruined the name of Hole by putting out a shitty ass CD with none of the other people. Just to, what did you think was going to happen with that? Anyway, whatever.
Are you thinking you might want to have sex with me?
Yeah,
it's ego, and she's just she ruins everything she touches. Whatever, fuck her.
So the guitar player in the band, the other guitar player is a guy, and they formed the band together. So when she did this, he's like, bro, what the fuck? Like, we didn't have a written contract. We had a mutual, like, verbal contract that we wouldn't continue with the band. Yeah. So, well, some bigwig somewhere was like, yeah, that's not written anywhere, so fuck them. Yep. All right. Next is Pearl Jam.
She What's fucks up? All her own teammates. I fucking hate her. Okay, Pearl Jam. Good.
All righty. Okay. This album is called Versus, not Verse, in case anyone thought that's what it was called. Versus is a 12-track record released in 1993, coming in just over 46 minutes long. It's the band's second studio album, reaching number one on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart. It contains the singles Go, Daughter, Animal, and Dissident. After a relentless touring schedule in support of their debut album, 1991's 10, Pearl Jam headed into the studio in early 1993, facing the challenge of following up the commercial success of it. The resulting album featured a rawer and more aggressive sound with scaled-back promotion efforts, including declining to produce music videos for any of the four singles. It's the band's first album with drummer Dave Abruzzese, who had joined in August 1991 and toured for 10. He would continue to play on 1994's Vitalogy, but would be fired shortly after due to personality conflicts with other band members. I'm going to guess that means personality conflicts with Eddie Vedder. Pearl Jam took the approach of recording one song at a time and agreed with producer Brendan O'Brien to mix the songs as each one was finished. Most of the songs were developed out of jam sessions. The first week of recording produced Go, Blood, Rats, and Leash before the band hit a wall. Versus featured a much looser and rawer sound compared to 10. Bassist Jeff Ament said, when we made Versus, our second record, I remember thinking, man, I wish our first record sounded like this. I thought it was more direct and more powerful. Besides the heavier songs, Versus features two acoustic ballads and Daughter, an elderly woman behind the counter in a small town. Originally, the album was titled 5 Against 1, but was changed at the last minute, first to a self-titled and then finally to Versus, a nod to the general theme of conflict present in most of the songs. At 1994's 37th Annual Grammy Awards, Versus was nominated for Best Rock Album, but lost to the Rolling Stones with Voodoo Lounge. Go was nominated for Best Hard Rock Performance, but lost to Soundgarden with Black Hole Sun. And Daughter was nominated for Best Rock Performance by a duo or group with vocal, but lost to Aerosmith with Crazy. Versus has been certified 7 times platinum. This record perfectly shows exactly why I love Pearl Jam and exactly why I can't stand Pearl Jam. Yeah. The verse in the title, when I was listening to this, to me, it sounds like there is a band here that wants to be two bands. They want to be this loud, hard rock band, and they want to be this boring-ass slow band. And this record smashes the two together. It's like the track list here should have been 2 EPs. Half of this record is fucking incredible, and the other half might be great to somebody, and it is great to somebody out there, but I don't want to hear the songs ever, personally. Take the 6 songs that I want to hear, put them on the good fucking EP, take the other 5 songs, put them on another release, and, like, get them away from me. I wouldn't mind listening to more Pearl Jam. The thing of it is like, I don't know when they become like a rock band, like a boring rock band. Vitalogy is probably still riding this wave, maybe No Code Yield. They've had a bunch of albums. They're actually about to release one, Dark Matter, in 2024. It might have come out. I don't know. But, okay, this album starts with Go, right? Fucking banger. One of my favorite Pearl Jam songs. Right off the bat, drums sound incredible. I'm giving that song like eternal banger status. Everyone is so tight. Gets your blood pumping. You can tell that these guys have been, if they weren't practicing to record 10, and then, you could tell that they were practicing to record 10, then they were immediately on the road forever. They're tight. They're practiced up. They're ready to go. After that song, Animal, right? Banger. Back-to-back bangers. Love it as well. Like, when Pearl Jam wants to be a big, loud, heavy band, I love them. Jeremy is awesome. Even Flow is awesome. Those are from the previous record. I'm also ordering those, like, eternal bangers. I fucking love those songs. The other records I will put on the Dream EP, Dissident is one of them, Blood, Rearview Mirror, Rats, Indifference, all those, I say, save them all. Then you have, like, a big hit, Daughter. Someone actually brought up Pearl Jam. It wasn't me, in another Discord group, and they brought up Daughter and said they love that song. Yeah, I'm sure there are many people who love that song. I don't care if it didn't exist. I don't give a shit. That song Daughter can fuck off. Glorified G, don't care if every copy of that was shot into the sun. WMA, right? There's people who are like, yo, this is the best Pearl Jam song ever. I'll give you that. The drums are legit. Song bores me to tears. Elderly woman behind the counter in a small town. Lame name, lame song. Bye, you're out. Leash, don't want to hear it. So half this record, I think, is stellar. They killed it. It would have made a 10 out of 10 five-star EP with all this other shit I don't want to hear that I have to weed through. It's not that high. Rob, what do you think of Versus?
So first of all, I downloaded the wrong album. I listened to 10. But yeah, anyways, sure, Pearl Jam.
Sure, talk about that.
Pearl Jam is like a dirty Dave Matthews band. It feels jammy and hippie in its tempo and whimsy, but there's a bit more edge there. I hear Eddie Vedder is a nice guy. Some book I read, one of those other girl power bands, like really befriended Eddie Vedder, despite not being like the same genre. He's supposedly like not putting on a front when he acts nice. Supposedly he is nice off stage. Whatever. Anyways, yeah, some of these songs had a lot of drum changes as if to contrast changes in feel. But mostly what I get out of the guitars is just like chords, just like disordered power chords or something clean, something arpeggiated, but like just, you know, I'm not getting riffs. I'm not getting sick riffage. I'm just like, I don't know. So I feel like I'm supposed to be like taking drugs and to see this band live and like, you know, just enjoy like being on drugs with a bunch of other people. Like this band's like, okay, they're pretty good. But to me, they're kind of boring. I wouldn't really listen to them again, but if you put them on, I'm not angry about it. Like comparing them to Dave Matthews Band isn't really that fair because I legit hate Dave Matthews Band, but like this band is okay. Like whatever. I don't know. Third place for the week. That's it.
Yomo, what do you think of Pearl Jam?
You know, album artwork looks like a nightmare. Honestly, I don't like sheep and I think it's coming from my butthole, man. It's scary as fuck. You know what, dude, I would say this is a 7 for 10 album for the week for me. And here's why. Daughter, fucking banger song, man. I like that. I like that he can sound out his vowels in the song, and it sounds good. You know, it's catchy because it's lazy. But to me though, when you're looking at this album and comparing it to like 10, it doesn't beat 10, man. 10 is like the fucking heaviest album. It's one of the greatest Pearl Jam albums of all time. I would say top three fucking grunge albums ever of all time. Pearl Jam fucking rocks. They are douchey though. Eddie Vedder seems like a fucking, like he's got an inflated ego. Favorite song has to be Dissident for me. It has a Drink Alone kind of feeling and Punch Holes in the Wall kind of thing. Like, you know, when, all right, No One Else Is Violent. Got it. Yeah. All right. This is getting awkward. Okay. I don't know, man. There's one song that I thought I liked, but now that I hate it, it's Elderly Woman. Only because of the title, the name, bro. Good song, but the title, like, why is it so fucking long and obscure, man? Eddie Vedder probably has micro penis. That's all I'm going to say. 7 for 10 for the week.
Nice.
I don't think he has a micro penis, but Dissident, I forgot about that song for 20 years, right? I'm okay with it. I said it can be on the good EP. It's on the slower side, but it has some balls. Yeah, you like Daughter. There's going to be a bunch of people who do. I don't know. I think it's like a slow song that doesn't have any balls, whatever. It doesn't matter what I think. Oh, yeah. So Pearl Jam, they are probably the only band around this time, in lumped in with the grunge genre, that were up to the popularity of Nirvana. Like, I'm not saying they were more popular than them, but they were incredibly popular. This album sold 7 million copies. I don't know what 10 sold, but it has to be in the multi-millions. So yeah, they were up there. They did good. They did well for themselves. Again, they're still putting out music. It's not anything I would listen to. I remember my cousin, he's about 10 years older than me. Whenever I would go hang out with him, when I would go over to his house, he was all about Pearl Jam. He had posters, he had music, CDs. He was always cranking it. He was all about it. So like Pearl Jam was very popular at this point in time. Anyway, let's read some YouTube comments and we'll move on. First, My Hero on the Drums. Next one says, one of Pearl Jam's best. Next comment, one, the end of my childhood and the beginning of my adolescence all on one album. Next one says, when masterpieces are underappreciated. And next one, and last one, this is Lightning in a Bottle, the best grunge record of all time. he's wrong, but okay. We ready to, we ready to what's up?
So we shared a meme on the Discord this week, and it was like a whole bunch of midgets, and it was like attached to them is like the name of every other like grunge band, and then there was one giant like muscular dude, and that was Alice in Chains. Now I happen to agree. So to me, like Alice in Chains is one of my all-time favorite bands, and like. Another thing, like, so Jomo sends me a lot of memes, and like, okay, so Creed memes are so fucking funny because like when we listened to Creed, I was holding this like memory of Creed being like the world's most hated band. And then like, we kind of all like, liked the Creed week. And then like, apparently the rest of the internet started to love Creed too. And so that's, it's, I don't know, memes like made it okay. And then once it was okay, people just like could relax and start to enjoy Creed. And then there's a bunch of other memes of like other grunge bands that I don't know how many of them actually work. The Alice in Chains ones work because it's just like Alice in Chains can make a grown man cry. It's like, yeah, that's fucking true. And then we got Nickelback memes. We got some other ones. It was some of them I couldn't fucking connect with. Oh yeah, what's the band? Yeah, Stained. The Stained memes don't fucking work for me. I don't give a shit about Stained. Fuck that band. Like, you can't... Stained does not get to come on the back of Creed. gay jokes aside, like, yeah, fuck Stained. To me, if I'm gonna say something about, I fucking love Alice in Chains. I like Nirvana a lot. I would put them at maybe two. I like Smashing Pumpkins. They have like 4 10 out of 10 songs, so I'll put them like, you know, third or whatever. Stone Temple Pilots, I like maybe slightly less or about the same as Smashing Pumpkins. And then I don't know, for me, I didn't really connect with Pearl Jam. Maybe I'm fucking weird, but I don't know. So to me, I like several of those grunge bands. I thought several of them were good. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, no, they are good. I just meant like sales-wise popularity. That's what I was talking about. Alice in Chains, let's be real. They're kings. They're kings.
Hell yeah. Everyone that's a band with riffs.
That's riffs. Fuck, I need riffs, baby. Yeah.
Riffs, I need riffs, riffs, baby. Riffs, 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 riffs.
Are you thinking you might want to have sex with me?
I need riffs, baby. Yeah. No, that chart is right. And the Pearl Jam guy is like the shortest out of everybody.
Yeah.
All right. We ready to round this out?
Yeah, let's go.
All righty. See how many things I can mispronounce here. Okay. The Real Thing is an 11-track record released in 1989, coming in just under 55 minutes long. It's the band's third studio album, reaching number 11 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart, and contains the singles From Out of Nowhere, Epic, Falling to Pieces, Surprise, You're Dead, and Edge of the World. It was Faith No More's first album not to feature vocalist Chuck Mosley, and the first to feature Mike Patton from the experimental funk band Mr. Bungle. The band continued to advance their sound range, combining funk, metal, rap, combining funk metal, rap metal, and alternative rock. The writing of the majority of The Real Thing took place after the tour for 1987's introduce yourself. All the music was written before Mike joined the band, and the tracks were either in pre-production or being recorded when Mike came in. And when he'd ask if a section could be made longer or different, the band would say, no, this is it. This is so you have to do it this way. So Mike Patton wrote every lyric and melody to the record over a 10 to 12 day period. The recording sessions yielded the recording sessions yielded several songs that did not appear on the album. Two of them, The Grade and The Cowboy Song, later appeared on singles. The third one, Sweet Emotion, was later re-recorded with different lyrics as The Perfect Crime for the soundtrack to 1991's Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. After the release of The Real Thing, Faith No More developed somewhat of a rivalry with fellow Californian group Red Hot Chili Peppers, whom they had previously played with on 1987's The Uplift Mofo Party Tour. Singer Anthony Kiedis accused Mike Patton of stealing his style in the epic music video. He told Kerrang! Magazine, "My drummer says he's going to kidnap Patton, shave his hair off, and cut off one of his feet just so he'll be forced to find his own style." In a separate interview, he clarified his comment, remarking, "I love The Real Thing, and I liked his vocals on that record. I mean, when I heard the record, I noticed subtle similarities, but when I saw the video, I was like, wait a second, what the fuck?" Mike Patton finally addressed the allegations from Kiedis in 1990, commenting that it just kind of came out of the blue. It doesn't bother me a bit. I got a real big kick out of it, and to tell you the truth, if he's going to talk about me in interviews, that's fine. It's free press. Either he's feeling inadequate or old, or I don't know. I have no reason to talk shit about him. Touring in support of the album lasted from 1989 to 1991. Due to their small catalog at the time, Faith No More eventually grew tired of playing songs from The Real Thing towards the end of the tour. This has been cited as one of the reasons for the change in sound on their next album, 1992's Angel Dust. At 1989's 32nd Annual Grammy Awards, The Real Thing was nominated for Best Metal Performance but lost to Metallica with One. At 1990's 33rd Annual Grammy Awards, Epic was nominated for Best Hard Rock Performance but lost to Living Color with Time's Up. The Real Thing is one of Faith No More's most successful albums and has been certified platinum. Rob, what do you think of The Real Thing?
Yo, saying that you're gonna cut off someone's feet is pretty extreme. That seemed like a fun, like, ball busty thing to say until he said he's gonna cut off his feet. Yeah. Shit, Anyways, this is a band I've tried to like a bunch of different times. Somebody that I was gonna be in a band with, like, this is his favorite band, I think. And I think my reaction to this band when I first heard them was like, my complaints are mostly on the production side, and some of that I'll repeat right now, like, because some of it is still how I feel. Some of the rapping stuff I think is like too cheesy and whatever. And then there's something about the production. I think the snare bothers me, and the album sounds a bit tinny. Now, in defense of that, like okay, so if it's tinny, it lacks bass, but also you can hear the bass very well. So like it's not a muddy recording. It's something else. And in fact, I really like the bass playing. I like the bass playing, and like there's a moment on Zombie Eaters where like this long like acoustic intro is done, and then there's like a distorted bass breakdown. It's one of my favorite fucking moments on the album, and it goes into like a foxtrot or something like that, like a super heavy riff, and then the keyboards over it, and I'm just like, yeah, I do fucking love this band. There are at least two songs I think are 10 out of 10. It's Zombie Eaters and The Real Thing, so there's some pop moments, and I don't know, some of this album is too cheesy for me and too whatever, but this is what, it's 88, and I don't think this is the worst production I've heard out of the 80s. It certainly isn't. And certain things don't really connect with me or are, cringe or something, but I also think there's a lot of genius here. Zombie Eaters, fucking yes. This is the album I listened to all week long, and the two songs I mentioned, and most of the album I listened to the cover of War Pigs I thought was okay. The drummer kind of drove me crazy with a few of his fills and a few of his whatever. But that, I don't know. I thought this album was not perfect, but quite good. And I liked them so much that I listened to some of their other stuff. Like the album that came out after this has a bit of like a Nightmare Before Christmas vibe. Whether that's cringe or awesome is up to you. But I might end up doing a Mike Patton week in the future, not next week. But I'm kind of, like, I've always been told that I need to give him more of a chance. I barely know him, and I know that he's done a bunch of stuff. And oh, and like for this album, I think it's kind of on the pop side. They also do plenty of time change shit, and they do plenty of like progressive stuff. These aren't like these aren't songs with two riffs in them. They have quite a few riffs in them, and I think. The keyboard and the guitars like trading off, I think, was next level. And I think they have some dynamics, and they have some, I don't know. I think there's a lot of good fucking ideas here. It's not flawless, but it's quite fucking good. And I had a good time listening to them this week. First place. That's it.
Yeah. I'm giving this first place as well. I'm okay with the cheese. Yeah. Epic does have cheese in it, but I've been listening to a lot of Eddie Money recently. So he's like the kind of the king of riding the line of cheese, so I'm all about it. Yeah, one thing I was surprised is Faith No More has a dedicated keyboard player. There's quite a bit of prominent keyboards in this, and I thought somebody was either they had someone in the studio do it or just someone in the band was doing it. And yeah, someone in the band was doing it, but he's the keyboard player, which is surprising that these guys had that. I did not know they had anybody other than guitar, bass, drum, and a singer. And yeah, he's one of the full-time members of the band. Guitar player, Jim Martin, this is the second to last album he did. He stayed for 92's Angel Dust. He was saying that this was their ideal album to make creatively and touring-wise. He left the band in 93. I don't really know what you do with a thought process like that. Like, oh, we hit the top of the mountain. It's what I deem it. Okay, bye. I'm going to leave and go do something else. So yeah, Faith No More is a band that I've wondered about quite a bit. Everybody knows Epic. You've all heard it a billion times. Love it. I actually think it's very impressive that he wrote the words and melodies around the music that was already there, because it feels so like natural. It feels like it was all written together, but really it was already done, or at least on paper was done. And he was writing around what the band was. They didn't want to retool anything for him. Fuck you. This is what's done. Work with it. I was surprised also to see that one of the original singers of this band was Courtney Love. So she's all over the place. You can't fucking get away from her. The keyboard player in Faith No More is gay, and he had a relationship with her. Like, everyone has banked Courtney Love. It is easier to find out the amount of people who haven't banked Courtney Love than the ones who have. Mike Patton is said to have one of the widest vocal ranges of all time. One of the last things that I saw about this, Axl Rose was at the top, and somebody in the comments was saying that Mike Patton's range is even wider. Yeah, he does all kinds of crazy shit. He does opera. I'm pretty sure he did something where he made whale noises. He's been in video games. He's done voice acting. He does all kinds of stuff. The guy's very talented. He has a great set of pipes on him. Yeah, bass definitely bangs on this album. I think it flows really well as well. What else do I want to say about this? Oh, yeah, so Surprise You're Dead. I could be crazy, but I'm pretty sure there's a string of guitar riffs. There's one in 5-4, followed by one in 6-4, followed by one in 7-4, then followed by one in 4-4. I could be wrong. I was trying to count them out. I don't know if everything is on time. I don't know if this is recorded to a click or anything. But yeah, that's what I counted it like 50 times, but it's kind of messy. Yeah, Zombie Eaters, that song has at least like three styles of music in it. Crammed together, impressive. 80s are a wild time for music. Again, I brought up Epic earlier. We've all heard it a billion times. So the cover of War Pigs. If this record came out today and I heard that cover, I'd say I don't give two shits about it. It's too strict as to what it is. It doesn't really do a whole lot of new shit with it. But it's the 80s. It's a cover of a classic song. I think the sound quality of it is fantastic. The guitar trills are fucking perfect in it. And I'm going to give it a pass. I'm not going to search for it. You're never going to see me go to YouTube and type in fucking Faith No More War Pigs. I'm not ever going to listen to it outside of it being on this album. But I don't hate it either. Woodpecker from Mars. Yo, this record can go hard as fuck at points. And that song is an instrumental, and it goes pretty hard. Last thing I want to say, this album opens with a song called From Out of Nowhere, which I love. I think the song is great. My only problem is the chorus drags it down. It slows the song down, and I hate it. Regardless, it's a great opener, and I when I hear it get dragged down, it makes me wonder if Mike Patton was like, hey, maybe if we speed up this chorus or whatever, and they were like, hey, it's already done, so just fucking write around it, whatever, and they just told him to shut the fuck up. I don't know, but yeah, I love this record. I think it's really good. I think it flows well. It's great. Jomo, how much you not or do hate this record.
Yo, I don't even have much to say because of how terrible they are. I will say that Roddy Bottom is a bottom. Thank you.
Nice.
Oh, absolutely.
He's a Ruddy Bottom.
Ruddy Bottom.
Okay, well, that's everything. What did you guys want to do next week?
Or Gojira.
Get together. Gojira. Very nice.
Wow, that's great. All right. Well, take care. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Are you thinking you might want to have sex with me?
All right. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Take care. Have a good one.
Take care.